It takes a special person to be a whistleblower. It's common knowledge. Most whistleblowers, even when they know they're doing the right thing by blowing the whistle on waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality, have their lives upended. They're ruined personally, financially, and professionally, and they sometimes even go to prison. Today, we'll tell you about one of the most important and impactful financial whistleblowers in the world, one you probably have never heard of. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Antoine Deltour was an auditor at the Luxembourg office of the public accounting giant PricewaterhouseCoopers from 2008 to 2010. He saw his job as one of being on the side of the regulators, of keeping the honest people honest. Instead, he found a massive system of fiscal optimization allowing large multinational corporations to avoid paying taxes in countries where they were conducting business. That's called income tax evasion. It might also be called conspiracy. In 2011, Antoine resigned from PwC. But before leaving, he downloaded documents detailing tax deals that the firm had brokered with the Luxembourg government, allowing companies to funnel billions of dollars through Luxembourg, thereby slashing corporate tax bills by billions of dollars in the countries in which they were based or in which they did business. Antoine shared the documents with a French journalist who used them as the basis for a television documentary, and soon after, PwC filed a complaint with the Luxembourg court. When the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists began reporting on the more extensive Luxembourg Leaks or LuxLeaks case, criminal charges were filed against Antoine. Facing 5 years in prison, later 10 years in prison, Antoine was convicted in December 2014. He was sentenced to a 12-month suspended prison term and a fine of 1,500 euros. He appealed, but his conviction was upheld. Undaunted, he appealed again. And in January 2018, the Court of Cassation recognized him as a whistleblower and dismissed all of the charges. Even before he won his appeal, the European Parliament recognized Antoine as a whistleblower and awarded him the European Citizens Prize in 2015. Antoine, we are honored to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Hello.
Let's start at the beginning. You were a young auditor at PricewaterhouseCoopers, one of the largest and most important Big Four professional services firms in the world. Take us back to that time. What did you see that made you think something was wrong, and when did you see it?
It was my first professional experience. It was in 2008, from 2008 to 2010, and I was just a junior auditor, so my work was just to make financial audits, which consist in verifying the accuracy of the accounts of my clients. So the clients of PwC in Luxembourg were mainly belonging to the financial sector. And what I discovered there was that most, not to say all, my clients were in Luxembourg only for tax purpose. So obviously I was not totally naive when I applied to a job in Luxembourg. I knew that tax advantage were part of Luxembourg attractivity. But what I found out as a junior auditor is that most of my clients had no real economic activity, no employees, no turnover, and had specific agreements called advance tax agreements, also called tax rulings, in which Luxembourg tax administration approved some very advantageous tax practices. Just to give an example, for one of the firm I was auditing, I found out that the effective tax rate was around 3% instead of the normal tax rate around 20 or 30%. So that was very, very low, and that was allowed by the tax administration, which approved all these tax treatments.
Can you tell us what exactly PwC was doing to help companies avoid taxes? And what was the Luxembourg government's role in all this?
Actually, the PwC part as an auditor was only to verify the accounts, but this is the job of the audit department. But there is also an advisory and tax departments that provide professional services, including tax advice. So just to make it simple, you have to imagine that almost all multinational companies operating in Europe have an entity in Luxembourg that is used to lower their tax burden. So PwC has the knowledge of its multinational clients and is really well informed to provide tax advice on how to lower the tax due. And what they advised was to set up a Luxembourg entity that had no real economic activity, but that was asking a tax agreement to the tax authorities. So this tax agreement is absolutely legal and is used to just approve in advance what will be the tax treatment of sometimes complex operations with cross-border considerations. It can be very complex. That's why sometimes you need the approval of the authorities to lower the legal risk you take. But what was really shocking in Luxembourg is that this system of advanced tax agreements was used to approve very aggressive tax practices and with some interpretation of international tax rules that could be attacked in other countries because it was really it was going too far. And I found out this in 2010 in a context that maybe is quite similar with the current context. It was the context of post financial crisis with a very strong debates about public budgets, especially in Greece. Greece had a very strong pressure to cut all spendings, and with increasing inequalities, with many people struggling to have access to education, to health, and in my opinion, there was a direct link between the difficulties of governments to collect enough resources to face these difficulties, and what I was observing in Luxembourg with big multinationals with huge profits with almost no tax paid.
I spent 4 years at Deloitte, then it was Deloitte & Touche. That was one of PricewaterhouseCoopers' major competitors, so I know what kind of training you went through. It was the same as my training. We were taught that if you see something illegal or unethical, you must report it immediately. You go through the chain of command or through the ethics officer. And if your chain of command is involved in the illegal or unethical behavior, you go to the government. What was the process that you went through to report the wrongdoing, and when did you decide to go to the media?
Actually, there were many steps, and the first one was my full understanding of a single case, because I obtained more and more autonomy in my work, and once I audited myself as a junior auditor, but I audited myself a small entity, and I had the full the global picture of what was going on between all the entities of the group. And I found out that all the profits that were shifted to Luxembourg were not taxed anywhere. Then I had the clue that something was going wrong, and then I kind of lost my motivation in my work because I didn't found the social utility I was looking for in my work. So I decided to resign. But the day before my last day, I was searching the network of the firm, and I found a folder containing hundreds of tax rulings, and this was absolutely not normal, because Big Four protect very, or should protect very strongly the data concerning their clients. And so this folder is without any protection, was just a free access on the network. So I decided to copy this folder, not knowing precisely what I would do with this information. And it's true that normally I should have first alerted my internally within PwC and find someone to tell my concerns, and if it didn't work, maybe share this information with the government. But in this case, both the firm and the government was involved in these tax rulings, so there was no ground to blow the whistle to these entities. So so what I decided is to first to make sure that my own understanding of tax practices in Luxembourg was right. So I tried to contact some NGOs already involved in tax matters in Europe, just to make sure that what I found was a problem was really a problem. And then I tried to testify anonymously on a radio program and on a blog, just to share publicly my concerns, but I kept anonymous. And then a journalist, investigative journalist working for French TV, contacted me because he read one of these comments on a blog, and he thought I was well informed, so he wanted to know more, and I accepted to meet him, and I decided to share the huge amount of advance tax agreements I had. I shared this information with him, and he investigated, and a TV program was broadcasted in France and also in UK about PwC tax practices in Luxembourg. And then the documents were shared with the ICIJ, and this led to the so-called Luxembourg Leaks or LuxLeaks story, which involved dozens of journalists around the world in all the continents, and who investigated some cases like Amazon, Apple, Volkswagen, Caterpillar, Coca-Cola, etc. And let's say almost all the brands you know as a consumer were involved. And if they weren't involved in PwC files, you can assume that they have almost the same tax practices with another Big Four company. That's why it was a systemic issue that could be treated only publicly with the work of investigative journalists.
Once you went to the press and provided documents to prove your allegations, did you think the experience was over? Were you surprised that the government took legal action against you?
I thought that as a source I was protected, and that was the plan. I thought that my part was over, and that I did the right thing to do, and that it was the end of the story on my part. So the TV program was broadcasted in 2012, and two years passed until 2014 with nothing more. So the time passing, I was thinking that the risk I had taken didn't realize. Let's say that I didn't have to suffer any consequence of having blown the whistle. But in 2014, so 2 years after I shared the documents, then I realized that Luxembourg authorities launched proceedings against me, against another whistleblower, Raphaël Allais, and also against the journalist Édouard Perrin.
We're speaking with famed European whistleblower Antoine Deltour. We're going to take a short break and come back with more of our conversation. Stay with us.
In 1937, militaristic Japan started a full-scale invasion of China. The invading army was rapidly advancing towards the capital of the Republic of China of the time, the city of Nanjing, leaving behind the burned-down villages and thousands of the dead. On December 13, the Japanese occupied Nanjing and staged a real massacre. For 6 weeks, the invaders exterminated the civilian population. They carried out mass executions, raped women, and were engaged in merciless robbery. The ruthless competition of two officers of the Imperial Army, Toshiaki Makai and Tsuyoshi Noda, gained particular notoriety. They competed with each other as to who would be the fastest to kill 100 Chinese with a sword. This monstrous competition was widely reported in the Japanese press. The Nanjing Massacre claimed the lives of about 300,000 people and became one of the largest crimes against humanity in the world history. After World War II, many participants of the atrocity faced trial. However, the commander of the Japanese army in the Nanjing operation, Prince Yasuhiko Asaka, was able to escape the responsibility due to the interference of the American administration.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously. Why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with European whistleblower Antoine Deltour about his work against corporate tax evasion in Luxembourg. Antoine, thanks again for joining us. Antoine, let's talk about the charges against you. Despite the fact that you reported on an illegality, like many whistleblowers, you were prosecuted. Tell us about that.
It felt very unjust, because the only person in, concerned by legal proceedings were the people who helped shed the light on a very important global issue, which is the tax practices of multinational companies. And every citizen in the world is concerned, because it's a matter of how government can finance their policies. And so the main effects of this story was the political reaction that was strong in the European Parliament. A committee, an investigation committee was created, and that moved to several countries in Europe, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, Malta, to just to interview tax professionals to understand what was going on. So it had some consequences, and the tax rules in Europe changed following the LuxLeaks. Some cases were investigated by the European Commission, with some decisions to condemn some tax practices. So this had some consequences, but the only person criminal charges were the whistleblowers and the journalist. And as a whistleblower, and you know it, John, you often are very vulnerable, because you're alone with no legal advice, with no one around you to support you. So it can be very, very destructive. And maybe my luck in this story, and which is maybe not very current for whistleblowers, was that this story, the LuxLeaks story, was very visible in the media, and that's why when Luxembourg authorities decided to charge the whistleblowers, there was immediately a strong public reaction, and a support committee was created with some close relatives and also some activists on tax matters, and this support committee was very active to gather fundings, to gather public support, and this was really, really helpful to cope with the criminal charges.
So you were found guilty, and then your conviction was upheld on appeal. Many people would have given up. They would have cut their losses because the sentence was suspended. But you didn't give up. You appealed again, and you won. Tell us about your decision to challenge the conviction a second time, and about the final court's decision to acquit you.
It's true. At the beginning, I was risking up to 10 years in jail and a fine above 1 million euro. So with the first condemnation, suspended condemnation to 12 months, I could have felt happy with this and just drop all this story, which was really pressuring. It can be very difficult to live with this pressure of trials, of lawyers, of media also. So it was a matter of principle. I felt, and lots of people around me was telling me that what I did was the right thing to do, and I couldn't understand to be condemned for this. And I really felt that the laws was on my side. So with the counsel of my lawyers, I decided to appeal the first condemnation. And again, I was condemned to another sentence, a reduced sentence. And I appealed again to the higher court in Luxembourg. And at this stage, for me, it was just a step to have access to the European Court of Human Rights, to which you can go only when you have ended with all the appeals, the possible appeals at the national level. And so I just went to this last step in Luxembourg just to have access to the European court. But then the Luxembourg, surprisingly, agreed with our arguments that I was a whistleblower according to the case law of the European Courts of Human Rights. And then a last trial, the fourth trial in Luxembourg, just confirmed this and acquitted me. The journalist was also acquitted at the first appeal, but Raphaël Allais lost in the higher court in Luxembourg, and then he had to go to the European Courts of Human Rights, which decided only a few weeks or months ago that he was also a true, a real whistleblower.
Tell us about the reaction to your whistleblowing, not by the Luxembourg government, but by the European Union. It seems to me that they were far more clear-headed and understanding of what you had done in your whistleblowing.
It depends on who you are talking about at European level, because it's true that the European Parliament was quite supportive with the creation of an investigative committee, and that some European commissioner, like Margrethe Vestager, was also supportive, saying that LuxLeaks documents were helpful in her investigations, etc. But what made the public interest on this story was also the fact that at that moment, the European Commission, the president of the European Commission was Jean-Claude Juncker, who was the former prime minister of Luxembourg for many, many years. So there was a reaction from European authorities to the LuxLeaks, but concerning the head of the European Commission, it was more a reaction of, let's say, a defensive reaction, just trying to justify what had been done and that it was in the interest of the economic development of Luxembourg, but not. But the reality was that this tax strategy in Luxembourg was very detrimental to all its neighbors, Germany, France, etc. And this was totally contradictory to the global principle that rule European construction, which is the fair collaboration of member states. So I think there was a real contradiction in the political reaction following the LuxLeaks, and that currently we still have big troubles in the way to tax global firms, because taxation of companies still rely on national laws, and when you are a multinational companies, it's still very easy to shift profits from one place to another to avoid tax regulations.
I'd like to thank our guest Antoine Deltour both for joining us and for his courage. And I'd like to thank our viewers for tuning in. Remember, standing up to your government means standing up for your country. That's what Antoine Deltour did. And the entire European Union is a better place because of it. That kind of behavior, that love of country, that love of the truth is what we should all strive for. I'm John Kiriakou, and you've been watching The Whistleblowers. Until next time.